Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me back this evening is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome back.
Paul, I cannot believe it because really when you think about it, so much has happened in the last week or so. I mean, last couple weeks. National championship game. Now we begin the tantrum, the chaotic craziness that is the NFL draft season. And I'm just psyched. I know we're going to be talking East-West Shrine Game. We'll talk a little bit about the Army All-Star All-American games. Just so much to unpack.
Yeah, absolutely. And right at the top, we'll start without some news and notes, some real quick thoughts about the national championship game, because it has been about a week and a half since Matt and I have been on air together. And then the bulk of the show is going to be all about the East-West Shrine game. I will go through the offensive prospects, you know, quick hitting thoughts on most of the offensive players there. And then, you know, we'll dig a little bit deeper on a couple of the guys. And then Matt will round it out with his thoughts on the two big high school all-star games, which we talked about in the last show. You know, last year at this time, you know, guys like Trevor Lawrence, you know, and so many other players were playing in those games, you know, and then look at the impact that they had this year in college football. So, you know, once upon a time, freshmen really weren't asked to do too much in the collegiate game right away, but that time has changed and you need to know these guys right off the bat. So with that said, let's get right into some news and notes first. Since we've been together, a whole bunch more guys declared for the NFL draft. One, obviously, Kyler Murray. If you listened to the episode last week with Nick Whalen, when he joined me and we talked about the NFL rookie report in terms of the quarterbacks, you know, and the running backs, we talked about Kyler Murray at the top of the show a little bit, but now it's been more official that he is officially declared for the draft. What that means, you know, we don't know yet if it officially means he's giving up baseball, but it does add a very interesting dynamic to this. The tight end class has went from a good tight end class to, I think, a great or elite tight end class with TJ Hockenson out of Iowa, who I compare to a Hunter Henry-like player, very all-around, not the athlete his teammate Noah Fant is, but a much more well-balanced all-around player that can line up in line, you know, can win at the catch point, can win in the red zone. I think he has a legitimate shot to go in round one. Irv Smith Jr. out of Alabama decides to leave after his redshirt sophomore year. A lot of about his game to like. He can catch the ball. He can block. He's really dangerous after the catch. He should test that really well in the pre-draft process as well. So now three possible tight ends, you know, now another potential quarterback name at the top of this. So a lot of intrigue. Matt, you weren't with us last week. any quick thoughts on Kyler Murray and the hoopla and craziness that is, you know, that moving forward?
Honestly, I mean, his tape is still something that I'm digging into. It's something that I haven't gotten a chance to really unpack. So I can't talk about every dimension of his skill. But I mean, listen, on the hoof, watching him play different games, just watching him go through, thinking back to when he was at Texas A&M and I got a chance to kind of look at him early where I did a little bit of a breakdown on him. You know, he offers a very intriguing blend, you know, of that athleticism and that potential as a quarterback. Listen, I see where he brings the elements of a shortstop meets kind of point guard mentality when it comes to playing the quarterback position. His main ability being the ability to distribute the football and what he can do to you on and off structure. All those things are well taken advantage of and well cared for. I do think, though, it would be remiss if I didn't at least acknowledge some of the struggles he had early on, at least in the Alabama game. And when I think you watch that Alabama game and you watch watch him in that game and how he was playing. I just look at him and I ask myself, okay, so what do we think? Do we think that, you know, he brings traits that are going to immediately transfer as a starter? Or is he going to have to make sure that he has the right coach behind him? Because I look at him versus Baker Mayfield, and I still think that there are elements of Baker Mayfield's game that I have yet to see in Kyler Murray, because again, like I said, I'm only in the beginning of his evaluation. I'm not going to claim I've seen everything, but things that I want to look for as I move forward. I want to know how well he throws with touch and anticipation on various levels of the field. I'd like to see what he does when everything is outside the numbers or between the numbers. I want to see, does the ball end up coming up short in instances? Is it something where the receivers can make runs after the catch? Can they make points after the catch? Can they get yards after the catch? So does he have that anticipatory type of thrower in him? I know he has the arm strength, so I don't think that's an issue. I think he has the ability to put velocity on the ball. But I mean, Paul, like you know all the time, man, the velocity is great. It's about harnessing that strength, harnessing the velocity, and adjusting trajectories as needed to match the situation in the game. That's what differentiates, in my opinion, the good quarterbacks from the great ones, the guys who show that sensitivity to the idea, the moment, and they're able to adjust what they need to do to meet the given demands in that moment on the field of play. I mean, not to get off base, but it's one of the reasons why I'm glad we're beginning to open up to players like Patrick Mahomes, why the Baker Mayfields of the world are fine. Let's not look at the mechanics as much as we look at the goals of the position, distributing the football, and being able to do so in a way that is conducive with players on your team, scoring and creating plays after the catch. And he has done that this year. I just don't know all the answers to all those questions and all those different scenarios. I want to look at it as we go. So, Paul, maybe you can speak to that, because I know you had a chance to watch a little bit more of him recently. Do you think Kyler Murray can do some of those things that I outlined? Do you think he shows that depth and that breadth of skill that he can make those throws in varying situations, adjust the tempo, the trajectory of the ball to meet those demands? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I watched as much as I could get film on him and find on YouTube over the last week or so. And I truly do believe he can play and translate at the next level. You know, I think the beauty of him is that, you know, listen, he has elite athleticism. That's, you know, a given.
But not even a question.
Unlike somebody like maybe like Lamar Jackson last year, who would use that athleticism immediately to take off and make a play with his legs, because that was what was needed in the concept and the, you know, the moment of the game and what they asked of him to do. You watch enough Kyler Murray, you start to realize he uses his athleticism very differently than a guy like Lamar Jackson did. Kyler uses it to move around in the pocket, constantly keeping his eyes, you know, looking downfield, looking to make a play with his arm. And then if he needs to, at the last minute, kind of take off and make a play with his legs, he knows he has that in his back pocket. But if you watch enough of him, you see a lot of instances where he will move around in the pocket, wait for his guys to get open. I think that is going to be basically one of his calling cards at the next level, because let's be honest, we do know that the size is going to be a little bit of an issue with the size of offensive linemen and defensive linemen, you know, at the next level. So you're going to have to get him on the move. He shows the ability to throw on the move. He shows the ability to use his athleticism to buy time in the pocket and wait for a receiver to get open. And I think he does a pretty good job putting it over that initial layer of defense. So talking about changing the trajectory, changing the, you know, how much velocity he puts on it, throwing with touch. I saw enough instances where I walk away from him and I understand he's shorter and I said he's not as thick, but he plays a lot, in my opinion, like Russell Wilson. He's got that baseball background. He's able to throw from different platforms and different angles. He seems to never get hit square on. And I think that's one of Russell Wilson's great traits when he's running, and why Russell Wilson has stayed healthy for the good portion of his career, because he never seems to take a hit square on. He always knows when to slide, get out of bounds. I saw that with Kyler Murray. It's going to be a fascinating few months. The old guard of we're looking for this prototype and this height and this measurement versus like people who have opened themselves up to a different type of player. You know, I just saw a quote, friend of the show, Sigmund Bloom, I think yesterday, put out something that he had something of a quote of something from an NFL scout or something that said something along the lines of, we don't know how to evaluate him. And I think that is so concerning and shows some of the holes that are out there in the NFL scouting circles when someone comes around that just doesn't look and feel and play schematically like everyone else they've so been accustomed to for the last 20 or 30 years. And I think it's good. I think Kyler Murray, more than anybody, is going to be one of the most unique scenarios and unique case studies moving forward. And it's going to be fun to kind of break it down on a regular basis.
Well, I mean, listen, this is a hot button issue for me, so I'm going to keep everything I say to under an hour and a half or less. So this is like, this is something, I mean, for Paul knows this as well as probably anybody out there that's been following things that I've been talking about over the years. This is a hot button topic for me, because for me, I don't think that the NFL, I think the NFL's that the people that are the evaluators, the people that are coaches, they are masters of their craft. I believe they know the game a thousand more times better than anybody out there who's not affiliated with a team would probably know the game. I'm not questioning that. I just question sometimes, are we asking the right questions in our evaluation of players? Are we asking the right questions? Are we looking at the quarterback position as simply a checklist in which we're trying to just basically check off kind of things that they do? You know, he can make a throw on an out route across from one hash to the next. Check. Like, is that what we're doing? Because if we're doing that, we're losing context. And if we're losing context, we're losing the better part of the game. You can't isolate the quarterback from the play, just like you can't isolate the artist from the time he lived and the medium he worked in. He's a sculptor. You can't say, go ahead and write the next great American novel. I think it was Matt Waldman and I were having a little bit of a banter about this. You can't draft Picasso and ask him to go ahead and write the great American novel, because you can't separate the artist from his means of expression. You can't separate the quarterback from the moment in time in which he made the play. You can't say these are the isolated traits that we look for that deem successful, because in my opinion, there's almost like a reverse psychology there. You're just looking at guys that played a long time and you're saying, what traits did they have? Go find more guys like that. And what you're losing is the context with certain players learn to play the game. Patrick Mahomes does not play the game in a very traditional sense. And that's okay. Just like Kyler Murray doesn't. Instead of looking for the next Tom Brady or the next Andrew Luck or the next Russell Wilson, allow yourself to be open to the idea of, what is it that I want out of a quarterback? I want him to have the ability to extend plays, distribute the football to my playmakers so they can score points on the board. I want him to be able to do that quickly, efficiently, with no turnovers. Okay, well, that's a general idea. And now you got to go ahead and find the guys that do that. And you got to be open to some of those guys being 5'9".
Yeah.
Because what if they just do it? Does it really matter that Patrick Mahomes is more comfortable off structure than in the pocket? Well, he can also play in the pocket too. I know, but it's not the point of playing structure, on structure, off structure. These are good things and we try to isolate them so we have clarity in our evaluations. But the idea is principal nature of the position.
distribute the football to the playmakers and let them make plays. If you can do that quickly and efficiently, you're a good quarterback. You're a good quarterback. So, I mean, I'm sorry if I'm getting passionate and it sounds silly, like I'm yelling. I'm not. I'm just really believe that we've got it backwards. We think 1 + 1 has to add up to 2. And I'm telling you that 2 is much larger than 1 and 1. I know that sounds weird, but we got to look at how they play the game with the skills that they have and evaluate if they play the game at a level that they can translate to the NFL. Just because when you reduce them down to their traits, it doesn't add up to an NFL player, doesn't mean it's not an NFL player. How do they put it together on the field to make plays? Find the guys that can do that often than not in the most many ways as possible. Find those adaptable players. Those are the guys you want to draft.
Yeah, I mean, and this can go on forever, so I'll end it here. You would think by now we would have gotten to the point that we realize that there have been unique players come into the league. Drew Brees, smaller player. Russell Wilson, smaller player, mobile player. You know, Lamar Jackson last year goes round one. A lot of question marks about his passing ability, but an elite athlete, but he was a little bit, he's obviously inches taller than Kyler Murray. Even Josh Allen, while he had that prototypical size, he was very different because you had to deal with, okay, well, what about the accuracy concerns? We want this much, you know, completion percentage. So we've seen these different styles of players, and we've all seen them have different levels of success that you would think by now we'd start to be open to every type of player, shape, size, and whatever. And it's still, you know, the fact that it's like we don't know how to evaluate him with such a crazy quote that comes from, you know, people in the league, but it's not just one. I'm sure it's a lot of people. It's a lot of GMs. I know, you know, we're Giants fans. We would be intrigued by Kyler Murray, you know, running the Giants offense, but I think they have a GM in place who's been in the league for a long time that I think is very much like, you know, true and, you know, to his way, and his way is the old way, what you're looking for. So I don't even think the Giants would consider Kyler Murray, and I think they're doing a disservice to their team and their franchise for just kind of pushing him off to the side. And maybe they prove me wrong, but I don't think so. So before we transition this to the Shrine Game and then the high school All-Star stuff, Matt, any quick thoughts on the national championship game? I mean, Trevor Lawrence, I mean, my God, the performance by him all year, you've been singing his praises, and it was like a culmination in that game of a pure, almost a perfect type performance by Trevor Lawrence as a true freshman. Justin Ross, I was lucky enough to be on the Fantasy Joes podcast last week, and Ryan, one of the hosts over there, said he had Justin Ross, you know, in one of his debut leagues exclusively because your freshman rankings and your freshman notebook. So, you know, he was like singing the praises of you and your rankings. You know, a couple of these true freshmen just stealing the show on the Clemson side. You know, Clemson's loaded moving forward with those guys. T. Higgins on the Alabama side. Tua, you know, had some struggles in this game. I still don't, you know, think less of Tua moving forward. I think he's going to be great next year, very much in play as one of the top, you know, quarterbacks in next year's draft. Any thoughts, Matt, quickly on the game? I know it's a little bit outdated at this point, but it's the first time we had a chance, you know, to kind of get together since it.
I think the biggest thing that I came away with from that game is, you know, great teams are going to continue to be great because I think they're going to just keep reloading, and we may very well see the same game again next year, number one. Number two, on the Alabama side, I really did leave saying to myself, you know what? The biggest thing that I noticed is when you watch how Clemson did end up putting the pressure on Alabama, a lot of it had to do with their front seven. A lot of it had to do with the pass rush and the number and the amount of time that Tua had to throw the football. And when you had that truncated timetable and Tua had to unleash the ball maybe earlier than, let's say, in previous games, you saw some struggles, and I'm not talking from struggles from Tua, and I'm not talking about struggles from the wide receivers. I'm talking about the collective whole, which was the connection between Tua and his wide receivers. You know, that pass rush getting on top of Tua made those cornerbacks a lot better. Those DBs had to really just hold on to those wide receivers a lot less time than they had in the past. And you saw the limitations of a guy like Jerry Jeudy and a guy like, you know, Henry Ruggs and those players, and maybe unfairly so when I say limitations, because that's not entirely fair. I do think it was a systemic issue,
But when they had to separate, they needed time to separate. They weren't able to separate with the same type of distance and frequency that they were able to do against other teams where the pass rush wasn't as strong and Tua wasn't under duress as often. And I thought that that type of climate really did play a big role in the lack of fluidity that Alabama offense really kind of showed. It was a lot of just mistiming, smaller windows, lack of tempo, those elements that speak to the harmonious nature that an offense has when they're running well. That's the issues that I saw within them. And I think that's why they weren't that fluid. And on the Clemson side, like you said, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is everything that I thought he would be, but getting a national championship in his freshman year was even more than I could have predicted. And I thought he was going to be right up there. I mean, I even heard preseason, I forget who I was listening to, maybe it was the First Take on ESPN. They were talking preseason, just like when they had just started the season, maybe it was a couple games in, Trevor Lawrence had just started to get some opportunities. And when he finally got the starting job, they were talking on the First Take that they felt like, could he be a Heisman hopeful? And everybody was chuckling, but not really. Like, we weren't chuckling. Like, we thought he was that good, and he ends up being that good. And I think Trevor Lawrence is obviously the next level of player. I will say this, Paul, and what was the first thing I said to you in the text? I said, Paul, I know he's good. I know it. I know he's so good, Trevor Lawrence. I get it. Sunshine, he's got that hair. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. He's going to do a Pantene commercial one day. I mean, listen, he's beautiful. But wait till you see Justin Fields. Just hold on. I know it's impossible. There's no way he's going to be just as good. I'm telling you, he's that good. How could he have not beaten Jake Fromm? I don't know. The same reason Alvin Kamara never got a carry. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? Sometimes coaches trust and feel confident more in certain players than others. There are biases that are inexplainable and inexplicable. Who knows? But Justin Fields is really, really good. Like I said before, Trevor Lawrence has never not been number one, ever, ever in any rankings. But he was number two at the Elite 11. He lost to Justin Fields for the MVP race. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, listen, it's going to be fascinating once we see now Fields at Ohio State, you know, commanding that offense, you know, if the football gods, you know, really want to do us something special before they head to the NFL, how about them two meeting in a national semifinal game or a national championship game? I mean, at this point, Lawrence has a legitimate shot at three national titles and one or two Heismans. Like, it's not out of realm of possibility. And I'll say this, and then I'm moving on. If people in your Devy leagues are not valuing Travis Etienne the same as DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers, J.K. Dobbins, pick another name, any name, go get him. Go get him, buy him, put him on your team, because when push comes to shove and next year's NFL draft comes around, he might be the highest rated of all of those guys. And if he's not, he's going to be near the top. Top two, top three, top four. He's going to be there, and he should be on level with those guys. So let's transition this to the All-Star Circuit is full underway. This is like really to the average or slightly above average NFL draft fan. This is kind of like the kickoff of draft season. Some people really use the All-Star games as a way to start introducing themselves to a lot of players. I know Matt and I use the Shrine game in particular as a way to introduce ourselves to some under the radar guys that maybe we haven't had a chance to watch yet. So we, you know, we hear and listen and watch the game, and, you know, it allows us to learn about some other guys and, you know, basically go back and find some other guys that maybe we haven't had a chance to dig deep in. Some guys are guys that we've dug deep in, but it's a great atmosphere. I think it's a huge part of the draft process. Both All-Star games, obviously the East-West Shrine game is this week, Senior Bowl next week. We'll have a lot of coverage next week in terms of the Senior Bowl. But let's start there in terms of the East-West Shrine game, Matt, and I'll kind of break it down like this. I'm going to run through the positions, the quarterbacks, the running backs, wide receivers, maybe we'll break it down, and tight ends. I'll go through and give my quick thoughts on a couple of things, and then you kind of can chime in with any thoughts you have on, you know, one or two guys at the position. For the quarterbacks on the east side, we have David Blau out of Purdue, you know, average size, average frame. He's got good mechanics, struggled versus pressure, probably a late round type prospects. He did show some growth this year, 25 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, but more of a late round UDF type prospect. Taylor Cornelius out of Oklahoma State, great size and frame, 6'6", 232, had a great year taking over for Mason Rudolph this year, has good arm talent in terms of velocity and strength, but he really struggles with his accuracy, especially in the intermediate and vertically down the field. But so far, early on in the practices, I know Taylor, draft analyst Tony Pauline over there has said he's liked how Cornelius has looked at this game. So he's going to kind of use this as a springboard there to try to, you know, make a name for himself. Also on the East is Jordan Tamu out of Ole Miss. He's a guy we've talked a lot about. You know, he led that Ole Miss Rebels offense, you know, good arm talent, mobile, can move around, play off structure, uses athleticism. I think he can push the ball vertically down the field, but he's really good in the short to intermediate range, throws with some touch. I think he's a prototypical, you know, day three type quarterback with an intriguing skill set. On the other side, Brett Rippon out of Boise State, some think he's the best quarterback prospect down there. A lot of people on draft Twitter are really high on him. You know, good mechanics, gets the ball out quickly, accurate in the short to intermediate range, improved his arm talent a little bit this year. But I still think he's more of a day three, late round guy than a, you know, top 100 guy or early day three type guy. I think his arm talent, you know, is average, you know, and everything about his game, I don't think is an elite calling card. I think he's a solid, really good college player, you know, but more of a backup type at the NFL level. Easton Stick out of North Dakota State, he was the hot name coming into this. Obviously, that's where Carson Wentz played. He's a much different player. He's only 6'2", 220. Natural thrower, good athlete, you know, can move around in the pocket, play off structure a little bit, throw with touch and anticipation, you know, and he's got above average to solid arm talent in terms of velocity and strength. Early reports after the first 2 days or so is that he has struggled down there, you know, with some passes. He's had some interceptions. He has not yet lived up to the hype that I think people were looking to see. And Marcus McMarion out of Fresno State, dual threat guy, more of a athlete than a true quarterback. You know, he had a great statistical season this year, but I think he's more, you know, a UDF type player down there, uses athleticism to his advantage. Matt, anybody stand out there you kind of want to make note of from the quarterbacks?
A vast majority of these guys I really haven't had a chance to watch in any detail, except for Jordan Te'amu, because I've been on that Jordan Te'amu bandwagon since last year. I think Te'amu is a really good quarterback, and I know that he was one of the players that flashed over the last couple of over the last day or so as being really good in that short to intermediate area. And I know that sounds like a little bit of a knock that his long and deep ball hasn't been as accurate, but you know, just consider for a moment the vast majority of the types of plays that you're starting to see in these kind of spread versions of the NFL offense. And consider also one of the most historic offenses of all time, the West Coast offense. I think you have to have the threat of the deep ball. If you don't have the threat of the deep ball, it's tough to hold those safeties, you know, in check. And especially when you're talking about, you know, a lot of these coverages being match quarters and things of that nature, where there's dual responsibilities off the way in which they read the routes concepts as they emerge kind of after the snap. Yeah, you have to have some routes that are going to keep those safeties a little deep. And you don't want them down in the box, so that way they can't play necessarily the run as well. You don't want them to get everything all muddled up. So you have to have a guy that can threaten deep. And I know he has more than enough arm strength to threaten deep, but I know that's not his kind of calling card. So as a result, I think he could fit really nicely. I think he's a better athlete than people think. I think he's an athlete that could be the type of quarterback that you could see backing up the modern era quarterback. Like if you're talking, what does the modern era quarterback look like? You know what? Jordan Te'amu has a lot of those skills and a lot of those traits. It wouldn't shock me to see him potentially work his way into a discussion as being the number two quarterback on a team with maybe an outside chance to start. I mean, look at Nick Foles, right? Nick Foles, love Nick Foles, right? Backup quarterback extraordinaire. Look at what he's doing, right? Yeah. I could see Nick Foles and Jordan Te'amu having a similar story arc in terms of where they go, just bouncing around, doing a little bit here, doing a little bit there. And all of a sudden, you know, you finally develop to a point where you're like, man, this kid can play and he's ready to play. It might be that he's 30 years old, but does that really matter in a game now where quarterbacks play until they're 39, 40? I mean, does it matter if it takes some time to adjust? I think he's going to have more than enough skill to hang around the league. He is what, I'll give you an idea. He is exactly what we thought. He reminds me of a Matt Castle style quarterback.
Yeah, you say Matt Castle. I was going to mention the name Case Keenum, who had a great collegiate career at Houston. got drafted late, kind of bounced around a little bit. And listen, Case Keenum isn't as great, but you know what? He literally led the Vikings to the deep into the playoffs last year, got a big time free agent contract this year. He's a, you know, listen, even if you want to say he's a below average starter, Case Keenum would be a great backup. You know, right now he's getting an opportunity to start, but I could see Jordan Tomo down the line having that type of, you know, progression. So he's going to be someone fun to kind of follow.
Like if the Giants were going to say, we're not going to spend money and really go after a big time quarterback this year, we're not in love. He's a quarterback I would invest in to go ahead and give him a shot. I feel like he's Kyle LaLeta-esque, only with a little bit of a better arm. And I think you could see him fitting into a Shurmur type system. That's the type of guy you could go and say, let's see if we're going to kind of develop a guy.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take this to the running backs, which is always one of the hardest positions down there at the Shrine Game to get a feel for how these guys are doing because, you know, they're not really, you know, much contact in practices. So not really until the game you get a little bit of a feel for these. But from, you know, watching some film on these guys, the most intriguing name there is Ty Johnson out of Maryland, in my opinion. He's a guy who was in the scouting notebook, explosive home run threat, elite kick returner, big play guy, great burst and acceleration. But the big question mark was his receiving ability, not just something he was asked to do much in Maryland. But Tony Pauline, been there, been tweeting out saying that he's looked really good in terms of receiving drills. That could be a big, big bump for him. And he could allow him to, you know, play more of that change of pace, committee back, kick returner, but he has to show that ability to be able to be a weapon out of the pass game. So it's good that we're hearing that from him. Marquise Young out of UMass, bigger physical guy, you know, lower level of competition there. Keep an eye on him, see if he makes any noise. Jordan Ellis out of Virginia, 5'10", 228, big physical, two-down grinder, you know, tough, over 1,000 yards this year and 10 touchdowns. Nick Brissett out of LSU kind of had to wait it out but behind Darius Geis, behind Leonard Fournette, you know, 6 feet, 221, fights for yards, you know, always falling forward for those extra yards, great in pass protection. It might be his calling card to get, you know, get on an NFL roster. Last year at this time, we were saying how good Philip Lindsay was at this game in terms of, you know, when we had watched him play in terms of pass protection. Little things like that really go a long way in NFL teams remembering that. But Brissett's an interesting player. Obviously, LSU, you know, a hotbed for big-time prospects and big-time recruits. You know, Brissett shows power, toughness, inside-type runner. You know, I think he's probably going to be a, you know, late-day Free-type player. Two Pitt guys, Quadri Allison, not playing due to injury, but his teammate, Darren Hall. You know, both of them, big guys. Allison, 6'2", 225. Darren Hall, 5'11", 225, both rushed for over 1,000 yards and double-digit touchdowns this year. Both got great size, good frame, good power, strength, and physical. Hall's got a little bit of burst and acceleration to his game. Early reports there that he looks pretty good, you know, in the aspects of the drills, you know, that you could take something out of from the running backs. And then probably the most talked-about running back down there, and Matt, correct me if I say his name wrong, at Nebraska, is it Divine Ozigbo?
Yeah, I think it's Ozigbo.
Ozigbo. So 6 feet, 235. But again, your reports are that he's going to weigh in much closer to like his playing weights, much closer to like 220 or 225. And for a guy his size, he's got some burst, he's got some acceleration, but he's got some lateral quickness to his game too. He shows the ability to get to the perimeter, you know, gets to the second level and can take one to the house. So while his size and frame listed on paper is one thing, he plays a little bit of a different style as a running back. I mean, he's got some power to his game as well, but he really shows some ability to get to the perimeter, something you wouldn't expect from a man his size. So he's an interesting name down there. I'm really excited to watch him in the game. Nebraska really was not a team to have many eyes on this year, you know, at times, except, you know, kind of checking in there on my boy Stanley Morgan at the wide receiver position, you know, but I'm excited to watch the game to see Johnson and then Ozigbo here are the two guys that I'm most looking forward to. Any thoughts on the running back position?
Yeah, the guy that stands out to me to the most is the guy that you mentioned earlier, which is Tyler Johnson out of Maryland. Tyrone Johnson is a guy that I am really excited about. I like what he brings to the table. He's a player that preseason, he was a guy that I had really pretty high. I think I had him either right out there at number 10 overall with my running backs or just outside the top running backs at number 11. And
that was my preseason feeling for him. So when I looked at him as a player, he just, Ty Johnson just gives you everything you would want. I think he's incredibly elusive in the backfield. I think his sensitivity, his spatial awareness, his just feel for the game is incredible. And I think it was our friend over there, Chris Tripodi on Draft Analyst, that it said it was interesting to see how he would kind of be able to make catches and see what he looked like in the receiving game. And it seems like the reports early on have been pretty good about that in terms of his receiving capability. So that's always important, I think. If he's going to be that true potential change of pace back, I saw a lot of that, you know, Tariq Cohen type of feel to him, then he's going to have to be able to contribute in the passing game. And it's interesting to see that he is showing really well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take this over to the wide receiver position. A lot of wide receivers there, some of really intrigued. So I'm going to break this down to the east and bring you back in, and then I'll do the west and then bring you back in. On the east side, the first guy really intriguing, Jamal Custis out of Syracuse. This is an intriguing guy, kind of a breakthrough star this year for Syracuse. 906 yards, 6 touchdowns, 17.8 yards per carry, 6'5". So he's got great size, good frame, ability to high point the ball well. And, you know, reports so far is that he's showing the ability to get vertical and beat people that way as well. So intriguing name that you may not be familiar with, that it's going to be fun to kind of follow him and see him in the game. Ryan Davis out of Auburn, 5'9", 185. Obviously, he's going to live, you know, he's undersized, but he's quick. He's best in the slot, in space. He's shown the ability to really put some double moves on guys so far in the reports there from the first 2 days of practice. Really quick in and out, showing that ability that he's been playing against SEC level of competition, you know, for years. So he's really shining so far there in this type of setting. One of the stars so far there has been Terry Godwin out of Georgia. You know, last year he was a starter for the Georgia team that went to the national championship game. This year he took a little bit of a backseat to Riley Ridley and Mecole Hardman. But Godwin, you know, in his own right, you know, was a big time recruit, got short area quickness, good separation skills, you know, can get vertical, doesn't, you know, how he does it, the catch point is obviously questionable in contested situations, but really smooth in and out of breaks, showing good hands down there. Every single time I go through my Twitter feed, it seems like people are raving about how Godwin looks down there. So he's an intriguing name, you know, a guy who I just watched also recently. And I kind of, you know, agree with a lot of the takes there. Underutilized this year, but an intriguing player is going to be a guy that makes an NFL roster. DeMarcus Lodge, who most out of Ole Miss, most people thought he should be at the Senior Bowl. Just recently watched him, shows the ability to get vertical, can separate, can get off press, wins at the catch point, good burst. All reports are that he's doing really well down there. The only negative report I heard was that Tony Pauline said he seen some issues with some drops, and he also thought that occasionally popped up on film as well. And then the last wide receiver on the east, small school, Jasper Horsted out of Princeton. He's 6'4", 225, highly productive stats. Obviously, last year was Justin Watson coming out of Ivy Leagues. This year, we'll see if Horsted, different type of player, bigger, wins at the catch point. Oh, and then one other guy in the east, Terry Wright out of Purdue, small, undersized, quick, in and out of breaks, good route runner, kick returner type guy with vertical speed there out of Purdue. Matt, any thoughts on the wide receivers from the East? Some intriguing names there with Godwin and Ryan Davis, you know, and DeMarcus Lodge. I mean, three SEC wide receivers right there of intrigue.
Yeah, so the first guy that jumps out at me, and you're right, there are so many of them. Going to DeMarcus Lodge. DeMarcus Lodge is a guy that I'm currently finishing up an evaluation on it. And my feelings on Lodge are he's extremely, extremely I would say polished in the way he approaches the position, especially on things like curls and comeback routes. He really does understand how to use every part of his stem, every part of his route to get separation from a cornerback. And I think he does a really good job of that. You'll notice when in games when he was running curl routes, he routinely worked his way back to the quarterback, understanding how that extra little time gave him an opportunity to get additional separation from a DB and be able to create a clean throwing window for his quarterback. And I think that speaks volumes about his understanding of the position. You know, things that I'm concerned about with DeMarcus Lodge is, again, like you pointed out, there's inconsistency in terms of catchable balls versus non-catchable balls. So we'll see how that all kind of plays out. Terry Godwin is a guy that's obviously been on the radar for a long time at Georgia.
And you already alluded to it. He is and has been one of the more sure-handed receivers that they've had. I mean, he's not exactly a new name. He's been around for quite a while, and he's been nothing but good at what he did. I mean, separation, running deep routes, running short to intermediate routes. He really has done it all, and he's a very, very polished prospect in terms of what he can bring to the wide receiver position. But you know, whether or not he's a guy that's going to be a game changer, we have yet to see. So let's kind of see how that evolves. And Jamal Custis, I had a chance to watch Jamal Custis a little bit to get a feel for him. And again, just kind of on the hoof, like he has that kind of high jumper's body. And by high jumper's body, I mean that kind of long upper portion of his leg with a truncated torso that gives him that leaping ability to kind of get up there and go get that football. But what's interesting is that he has more speed than you think, which, so it doesn't surprise me that he's winning on vertical routes. He does have more speed than you would think, because you watch him and it just seems like, how is he running past everybody? And sure enough, I mean, he is. So he's an interesting prospect to watch. I'm interested to see what he looks like as time goes on. But these are just so many receivers. It goes to show you how the game of football is really changing, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just on the east side. On the west side, there's a couple guys that have really been standing out. Right at the top, Keyshawn Johnson out of Fresno State. I mean, monster year this year. 95 catches, over 1,300 yards and 8 touchdowns. The guy has literally mitts for hands, great hands. I think he's at the NFL level. I think he's going to be more of a possession or inside slot type, but he's got decent size at 6'2", 200 pounds. You know, smooth quickness, good separation ability. All reports down there is that he has just been putting on a clinic in terms of his route running, in terms of creating space against the defensive backs, and in terms of showing off his hands that seem to be very natural. So Keyshawn Johnson is a guy I just recently watched, came away pretty impressed with him as a guy who I think could be in that, you know, round 4 to round 6 range. You know, once you get to that day, teams are looking for very specific roles of what they want. I think Johnson is a guy who's squarely going to be on the radar. I'm kind of excited to watch him in the game this week as well. The other wide receiver on the West who's getting a decent amount of attention is Cody Thompson at Toledo. He's a guy who's in our scouting notebook already. You know, he's had a very productive career at Toledo, good route runner, gets in and out of his breaks quickly, very savvy. I look at him and I think he's a very savvy runner. He's got good size. Athletic. He was on Bruce Feldman's freak list before the season started. Guy who he thinks is going to jump out of the building at the combine. So Cody Thompson's another name there to keep a close eye on. You have Ronquavion Tarver out of Utah State, another bigger type guy who kind of had a breakout this year, 66 catches, 8 touchdowns. Been rather productive under the radar for Utah State for 3 years, but I think this year was his best year. Good size, good frame, possession style wide receiver, but some reports that he's looked well down there, winning contested balls, kind of his calling card, the ability to go up and get it. John Duhart out of Old Dominion. He's another guy, really productive year, you know, smaller level of school, so you're kind of excited to see them in this setting to see how they look. Red zone weapon. He was injured last year. Good hands. Keep a close eye on him. Sean Poindexter out of Arizona, another 6'5", 218, former volleyball player, great size. Again, he's all about his length, his catch radius. Questions for him are his route running and quickness in and out of breaks. Brody Oliver from Colorado Mines, 6 foot, literally had to look that up. I thought it might have been a fake school. 6'3", 210 pounds, possession style wide receiver, good hands, obviously level of competition, massive jump up for him this week. So those are the guys on the West. I think Johnson and Thompson are the two most intriguing one. Matt, any thoughts on the wide receivers on the West?
I think you hit on all the major guys. I would like to highlight Keyshawn Johnson. I do think that there's a lot to be said about him as a route runner. And I do think that creating separation is more than just an athletic feat by far. And I think we all agree with that. But when you get a guy, he reminds me of, not stylistically in any way, but his kind of story arc, his kind of meteoric rise could be very similar to a Deshaun Hamilton. We could not really understand the value of a player like him until we kind of see him kind of in a setting like this where we get a chance to really isolate him in as many situations as possible. So Keyshawn Johnson, you're right. He has hands for mitts. And I think that he does the little nuances and things so well
in his actual route running that he, again, these are the things that I believe that transfer. I do believe when you get a great problem solver like a Keyshawn Johnson, I do believe these things translate to the next level. It doesn't mean that he's a bona fide first round pick. He is going to be at the mercy of his draft stock. If he's drafted in the fourth round, like Paul said, and that's where he goes, well, then it's not going to get the same weight as a first round wide receiver. And he's not going to get the opportunity of a second round wide receiver. He's going to have to work his way up. But let me tell you something, just like what Trevor Lawrence said about Hunter Renfrow, he could be a quarterback's best friend. And that's the type of receiver that more often than not finds the field.
Yeah, and you always joke around that I'm more the better one at giving comps, but I think the Deshaun Hamilton comp is spot on. And I mean, and taking it a step further, I mean, Deshaun Hamilton used the Shrine Game last year to catapult himself into the Senior Bowl, into the eyes of a lot more national attention, and then rode that to, you know, being a guy who was taken in the fourth round of the NFL draft and, you know, potentially, you know, a future starter there who had a really productive finish to his rookie year this year. I would not be stunned to see Keyshawn Johnson, you know, out of Fresno have a similar pre-draft process, you know, that we saw from Deshaun Hamilton last year. So real quick, Matt, the tight end position lacking here a little bit in terms of the receiving types. I think the best receiver here is CJ Conrad out of Kentucky. You know, he's a guy who good production at Kentucky over his career there. He's got good size, uses that size to create space at the catch point, good hands, but not a guy who, he's a guy who lacks athleticism, not a guy who's going to get in and out of breaks. Matt Sokol out of Michigan State, former quarterback, high school quarterback, you know, really thought he was going to emerge this year, but kind of struggled. He's an intriguing name down there to see how he looks. He's going to test out decently athletically. But for him, it's really about still learning the nuance of the route running. Daniel Helm out of Duke, this is going to be my first exposure to him. He's a transfer from Tennessee, was a four-star recruit. He's got good length, probably a third tight end type at the NFL level, late day three or UDF. On the west side, Andrew Beck, you know, at 28 catches for Texas this year, more of an inline blocking type, you know, short check down stuff. Kendall Blanton out of Missouri, you know, he was another tight end in that Missouri offense. Big guy, 6'6", 265, great size and frame, good play strength, but just lacking the athleticism, I think, to be, you know, a big-time tight end at the next level. And then Kano Dillon out of Oregon, massive size and frame, very little production, but he's 6'5", 265. So a lot of these guys are going to be more your inline guys, you know, kind of maybe make the team in terms of their blocking abilities, you know, third tight ends, you know, practice squad type players. Conrad is the only one that really intrigues me in terms of his pass catching ability, but lacking in the athleticism department. So not a strong group, I think, of tight ends there. Matt, any thoughts on the tight ends? Or if not, I know you were watching these high school all-star games and you have some guys you want to let the audience know, similar to last year when you were dropping names that we all now know from the last couple weeks when these all-star games were played.
So I'm going to just kind of take it to that Devy slant, if you don't mind. So a quick Devy slant to kind of round out the show. If you haven't had a chance to watch the high school all-star games, I'm pretty gosh darn sure they'll be airing them now until, you know, the very beginning of the season. You'll be able to find them somewhere. They're well worth your time to watch. Overall impression, starting with the Under Armour All-American game and as well as the Army All-America game. Quarterback play. Overall quarterback play, it was meh. It was okay. It wasn't the fireworks display that we had saw the previous year. But then again, I don't know if that's a really fair comparison, considering that you might argue that the class that we will see come out with the Trevor Lawrence and the Justin Fields and the JT Daniels and the Matt Corrals could be one of the historically great quarterback classes. So to say that that's, you know, fair or unfair, it's probably very much unfair. So if we take that away and we look at this under a normal lens, there were definitely some quarterbacks to be excited for in terms of what they could bring to the game sooner rather than later. Starting in the Under Armour All-America game, if we look at the quarterback position, I think it was Jaden Daniels and pretty much everybody else. And Jaden Daniels is right now committed to Arizona State University. He'll be going to play for Herm Edwards. And there's no short of actual talent there to kind of challenge him. But Jaden Daniels, yes, he's 157 pounds. And he is, in fact, 6'2". That is actually his actual weight and his height.
157 pounds, you heard it right. But he's got that long, kind of lean, kind of lanky demeanor where he can move, he can throw on and off structure. He showed the capacity to throw on the run. He showed the capacity to extend the play. He showed the ability to adjust direct trajectories and throw with a little bit touch when needed. He really did show a tremendous toolbox in that game. And he really, to me, stood out as the top quarterback in that game. Moving on to the Army All-America game, just to take a look at the quarterback position specifically, Graham Mertz had, I think, like five touchdowns in that game, if that's correct. It might have been five. It might have been seven. I don't remember the actual statistics, but he threw a lot of touchdowns. And Graham Mertz is 6'3". He's 205. He's going to play for the Wisconsin Badgers, and there's every reason to believe that he's probably a starter next year for the Badgers. I think there's going to be an opportunity for him to play early. And I'm going to tell you, he was very impressive. Out of both games, he might have been the most impressive of all the quarterbacks, even though Spencer Rattler and Bo Nix did, in fact, play in this game. Both of those guys were Elite 11 prospects that were vying for the top position. You could argue that Graham Mertz was probably the best quarterback in both of these games. He showed tremendous touch, tremendous ability to throw the football. He really did show that capacity that you want to see to throw with the anticipation, which means he has that understanding of the defense as well as what his wide receivers can do. And he just shows that ability to throw a really soft. I mean, they said it many times, and I agree with them when they were doing the telecast, a soft catchable ball. It means that his trajectory was so nice that it almost looked like he was kind of laying it into the receiver's hands. So there's a lot to be excited about if you're a Badgers fan. The other quarterback that stood out, especially at the Army All-America game, was Spencer Rattler, 6'1", 173 pounds. He'll be going to see Lincoln Riley and the Sooner offense next year, and he is every bit everything Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield were before him in terms of the style of play that he brings to the table. He's that guy that can move the pocket. He's more comfortable throwing on the run than he is throwing from the pocket. Doesn't mean he can't. It just means that you could see a dramatic self-organization of his understanding of the game when he kind of moves and rolls and throws. He's just more comfortable working outside, working off structure. He moves extremely well to his left for a right-handed quarterback, which is really interesting. He almost looks like he's got it down so pat. It's actually entertaining to watch him. Watch him throw to his left, and I'm going to challenge you to find a better quarterback's footwork moving to his left when you're a right-handed guy. And he was doing a little Patrick Mahomes imitation, right? He was trying to throw across his body to the middle of the field to the open receiver, and he connected. He connected several times. He's got an exciting array of skills, but he got a little bit towards the end. I think there were a couple times where his ambition and his aggressiveness might have been a little bit too much. They're throwing into double coverage when not needed. But then again, it's an all-star game. You're trying to make plays. You're trying to show yourself out. I still think he stood out really well. If we go to the wide receiver position, starting back at the Under Armour All-America game, I think it was a Theo Weiss show. Theo Weiss really did show out. He'll be the Oklahoma commit along with Spencer Rattler. So Theo Weiss gets added to the situation. And Theo Weiss really did look tremendous in this game. He was making catches amongst double coverage. He was doing a good job kind of releasing at the line of scrimmage and battling redirects. He showed good play strength throughout his route stems. He is going to be an immediate contributor to that Oklahoma offense going into the next year. If we go to the Army All-America game, we got Wandale Robinson. He's going to be going to Nebraska. He's 5'10", 179 pounds. He pretty much is very similar. They noted it a couple times, and I understand where the comparison comes from. People, they said that the Huskers really got their own version of a Rondale Moore. And Rondale Moore is the Purdue freshman phenom this year who just did nothing but rack up yards and show unbelievable talent this year. Wandale Robinson is a player that they felt was very consistent with that. I look at him and I see a tremendous, tremendous slot receiver. And I think he has incredible, incredible skill. And I think Wandale Robinson really did stand out tremendously. I like Wandale Robinson. I think he's a player to keep on your radar. I don't know if I'm going Devy Leagues quite yet to get him. I think I'm getting him late in a Devy League if he's available, because I see him very easily stepping in and playing that H-back role, so to speak, in an Ohio State offense where you just give it to him on screens, you give it to him on underneath routes, you give it to him anywhere where you need to RPO it, make him your running back that play. He just has incredible, incredible skill in the open field. So that's why that Rondale Moore kind of comparison does make sense. Also, Jaden Hasselwood, the number one receiver in the country by many measurements. He's 6'3", 195 pounds. He's also going to Oklahoma. So two out of the top five wide receivers are actually going to Oklahoma. Theo Weiss, who we talked about earlier in the Under Armour All-America game, and Jason Hasselwood. Hasselwood is unbelievably intriguing as a prospect. His ability in jump ball situations is incredible. His sensitivity is in releasing at the line of scrimmage is unbelievable as well. His vertical speed is very solid. I don't think he's going to win you and beat everybody in a foot race, but it's enough to make everybody stay honest. And if you look at his body type, the way he's built, man, I got to tell you, you see every bit of that sprinter-esque kind of build into him. He's got that little bit of a lower center of gravity, that longer torso, but squattier lower limbs for his size. And it just means he's carrying that weight a little lower than you would expect normally. And as a result, I kind of think that he's going to be that type of player that's going to just kind of get to that next level. And he's just going to kind of take off. If take a look also at that game, Blaylock as well, Dominic Blaylock, who's going to be going to Georgia. Okay, is 6'1", 187 pounds, and I think he's going to be tremendous. I think he's going to be a guy who's going to be unbelievable in the wide receiver position. And I'm just going to group all these running backs together, and that way we can kind of get a better feel for it. But if we look at it, the running backs, you got Jerrion Ealy was probably the best running back I saw out of all the All-Star games. Jerrion Ealy is an Ole Miss commit as of right now. Where he ends up settling, we'll see, but he is an Ole Miss commit. He is by far the most intriguing out of all the running backs that I saw in these All-Star games, by far. He looked great, catching the football, making catches in traffic, keeping his feet in bounds while falling out of bounds and making catches. Guys, I'm telling you right now, you want to go grab a freshman that's going to make you very happy in 5 years? It could be Jerrion Ealy, but there is word to be warned. He is also a dual sport player. Yes, the MLB is coming to knock at his door. So, do you draft him and weather the storm just in case he doesn't go? Or do you go get him? I don't know. For me, I'm taking Jerrion Ealy pretty much anywhere I can get him. I'll let him make that decision. I'm going to grab him. And if you don't want to go that way and you want to go a little safer, I think the other game, the All-America game, Army All-America game, I think Trey Sanders showed out. I think he looked every bit what you wanted to see from a typical Alabama Roll Tide type of running back, 6 foot, 216 pounds, speed, power, you name it, catch the football. I mean, he looked like, again, they make them in labs. I don't know what to tell you. That's where they get their running backs. They just chemically, Nick Saban in his trunk, he just mixes genetics together and he gets all these running backs. But the guy that I'll tell you this, and I'll leave it here, and I'm not going to take credit for this. I know Kyle, our friend over there, Kyle Franchise over there that you follow, on many times over. He brought him up first because I hadn't watched him. I saw him for the first time just before this game. Breece Hall. Breece Hall is going to the Cyclones, and he's going to be replacing David Montgomery. Breece Hall, wow. Wow. 6'1", 200 pounds. If you want to play it safe or you want to make the shark move in your dynasty leagues, go and get Breece Hall. He can catch the football. He can run routes. He was really good in the open field. If I had to rank him, I would take Jerrion Ealy right now over the both guys I said because I really do like him. If he wasn't playing baseball, it wouldn't even be a question. He would be the first guy I'd go get. After him, Trey Sanders is really good. Breece Hall is a hell of a consolation prize. I'd take any one of those three running backs, but Jerrion Ealy is by far my favorite. But you got to be willing to weather the storm and run the risk of him playing baseball. That's the only thing. But there's no question that Jerrion Ealy had the best All-Star game performance of any player at any position, maybe outside of Graham Mertz because he threw like 12 touchdowns, out of anybody out of all the All-Star games. That's how good Jerrion Ealy was.
Yeah, I mean, there it is, guys. If you miss those All-Star games, like Matt said, make sure you try to find them on the DVR, you know, search in your guide to see if you can get eyes on them, look online, see if you can find them, because they really are such a great introduction into these guys. Matt just ran through so many names that, you know, prior to, you know, those All-Star games, I had never heard of before, you know, and use this opportunity to start to get exposed to these guys. guys a little bit. You know, you'll hear Matt probably talking about some of these guys again when we get to, you know, when he talks about, you know, what he saw at the spring games. And some of these guys Matt just talked about, I'm sure will be in the freshman notebook once that goes live, you know, in a couple months. You know, these games are of intrigue, just like the Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl have value at the NFL for the NFL draft. And have value, these high school games have some value because you're putting all these great athletes, all these top recruits on the same level playing field. So maybe, you know, if they didn't play, you know, against top level athletes on a regular basis at their high school, now you're starting to at least put them in the same, you know, level and kind of even things out a little bit. And I really do think it allows us to get a better feel for A, their athleticism at times, you know, when we see them up against other athletes, and two, just to start to see them in this type of setting where, you know, I know it's laid back and it's fun, but at the same time, you know, they're looking to show their skill. They're looking to use this for themselves as a jumping off, you know, to become more of a national name and a national brand. So they have a lot of value, and they're a great way to kind of start exposing yourselves to them for your Devy leagues, your Devy drafts, and then, you know, down the line, eventually your dynasty rookie drafts, you know, years away. So, Matt, any final thoughts?
No, I'm going to share one thought with you. I think Nick Wendell and I were talking about this in the background, so I'll pose it out there. Probably the three hottest names in Devy leagues right now in upcoming drafts are going to be, where do I take Travis Etienne? What do I do about Justin Ross? And do I draft Rondale Moore over both of those guys? And where does Trevor Lawrence fall? That's a really intriguing question for everybody. So what do you do with the Trevor Lawrence Tua Tagovailoa? What do you do with Justin Ross? What do you do with Travis Etienne? What do you do with Rondale Moore? Paul, you who plays in a few Devy leagues and really honest to God, you see this more with rookies. I'm still going to ask you. You still watch the college game as much as anybody else, and your eyes are as good as anybody else. Out of those four players, okay, regular PPR league, non-super flex, okay, single quarterback league, you're in a dynasty league, those four guys are available, or those five guys are available. Give me your off-the-hoof postseason quick ranking in order. Go.
Wait a minute. You said five or four?
I'm giving you five. I'm giving you Trevor Lawrence, Tua Tagovailoa, Rondale Moore, Justin Ross, Travis Etienne.
Okay, so I, you know, PPR. one quarterback league. I'm going to hold off on the quarterbacks because there's a lot
you
of them.
You don't want to get Trevor Lawrence though. You don't want to go. You're not there, you're taking Andrew Luck. You're not going to do it part two.
No, not over Justin Ross, who I think is the closest approximation that we've seen to a Julio Jones like prospect in quite some time. So Justin Ross would be number one for me. Then I would say Rondale Moore number two. Travis Etienne would be number three. And then I will say this is a switch. I'll put Trevor Lawrence at four and Tua at five, even though Tua is a year closer to the NFL. And I think he's going to be fantastic as well. I just think by the time it gets there, Trevor Lawrence is going to be the most hyped quarterback prospect we have ever seen in our lifetime go to the NFL. I think the swarm is just going to be epic by the time we get there. But fantasy, if you would have said a two quarterback league or a super flex, then I would have started with Lawrence, followed by Tua, and then I would have went Ross, Moore, Etienne. So that's kind of how I would have it laid out right now for Devy leagues.
I think in a complete vacuum, when I talk about skill, I would probably go Moore. I would then go Ross. I would then go Etienne. And then I would go, if I single quarterback, I would go Lawrence and I would go Tua, but it would be razor thin. I don't care if I get them. So I don't care if I go that low on those guys, but there's a part of me, like you said, if it was a two quarterback league, Lawrence would be number one. I'm going to tell you right now, if you're in Devy leagues and you have a mid to late draft pick, you do a lot worse than taking something like Trevor Lawrence. I'll tell you that right now. You feel really bad leaving him out there. If you're number five or six and he's still out there, I wouldn't leave him.
Yeah, I mean, don't let
like if you got Kirk Cousins as your starting quarterback right now for your league, that's great. Kirk Cousins is great. Go get Trevor Lawrence. Do yourself a favor.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, so much fun to talk about these guys. I mean, I can't even wait till we start talking about the next wave of classes. But we have so much, you know, at the forefront here. I will be live tweeting the entire Shrine Game. reach out to me, ask questions. I'll be sharing my thoughts on all of the offensive skill players, some of the defensive players as well. You know, then next week, Matt and I will have a Shrine recap with a big, big Senior Bowl preview early in the week. Potentially some other episodes, you know, with Senior Bowl coverage as well next week as well. So best way to support the show, get over to the website, SaturdaySundayFootball.com. Click on the premium content tab and buy the premium notebooks for $9.99. You get access to all four notebooks, the scouting notebook, the draft ranking, the rankings notebook with our draft eligible rankings on skill, Devy rankings. It'll have our tiers. It'll have our dynasty rookie rankings updated all year. Scouting notebook, all our profiles. You know, we're adding guys to it on a regular basis. Even after we're done adding all our full profiles, we will continue to add more of the lower level day three UDF type guys that we haven't done a deep dive into. We will get eyes on them and do a short synopsis, get them into the notebook if we think they're worthy of being in it. And it'll be constantly updated. We got a lot of film to watch between Senior Bowl and Combine to kind of get us set up with our tiers. And then you get the freshman notebook sometime in March, which we alluded to before. And then the draft projections notebook right around draft season as well. If you can't do that, please get on iTunes, Google, all the places, rate, review, subscribe. We greatly appreciate that as well. So on behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the Shrine game this week, and we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.